Welcome to the Pop Culture Club Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome back to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. So for this episode, it's a little bit different. This is our Little Topics episode, the first one we've done in 2024. For those who don't know, our Little Topics episodes are episodes where we each bring little topics to discuss, topics that wouldn't necessarily make a full episode in themselves, but we just bring them to this episode, and we discuss them, and usually turns out pretty good. But for this one, we ran into some technical difficulties when we were recording. So the first segment you're about to hear is Kevin talking about his recent trip to WrestleMania and the WrestleMania weekend. So that's his first little topic. Then we'll get into our second attempt at recording following that. So here we go. Here's Kevin talking about his WrestleMania weekend.
Chris, it is going well, and I want to say I should have updated my social media and marked myself safe from the earthquake.
Yeah, that was crazy that you guys had a earthquake in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, because it was, the heck, was it Friday? Friday, yeah, I think that we had it. It was centered in New Jersey. I was with a friend, and he said, we had an earthquake. I go, what do you mean we had an earthquake? And he's a firefighter, and he's like, I'm getting all these alerts on my phone that there's an earthquake. People are freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I felt nothing. Like, neither of us did.
Yeah.
So we're wondering if we were driving at the time, you know, and that's why we didn't feel anything, but felt nothing. Then there was an aftershock, too, that freaked people out even more.
Yeah.
There was a four point something, I forget exactly what, centered in Jersey, and it turns out there are old fault lines, but there's been nothing recorded in, like, over 100 years.
Yeah.
So it's there, but it's, like, a dead fault or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. But those are the fault lines that helped build the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
So if there's mountains, there is a fault line somewhere nearby. Like, that's kind of how it happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was just in shock for it. I don't know what I would have done. Like, I've experienced tiny ones, like ones and twos randomly here and there. And for me, when I've experienced, coincidentally, the two times I knew I experienced one, I was sitting watching TV. And I'm like, why does it look like the TV is stationary, but the wall's moving?
Yeah.
And that's when I realized what was going on. But yeah. I had that twice. And, you know, there's no damage or anything. It's just really weird when it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So hopefully it's not the start of, like, you know, one year or anything.
Yeah, we had something similar a few years ago. But I didn't actually feel it where I was at, but I think my wife said, like, she didn't feel it at our home, but other people in town felt a little shake because there was a little earthquake. But we're, you know, only a few hours from the Rocky Mountains, so yeah, it makes sense that if there's a fault line with mountains, yeah.
Yeah.
But, still crazy, though. But glad you're okay, and I know I should just begin the episode by saying, this episode is just Kevin and I. we're doing an episode called Little Topics. So rather than have a big topic to discuss on the Pop Culture Pub, which is what we would normally do, we're just bringing a couple topics each that wouldn't necessarily constitute an entire episode, are worth talking about nonetheless. So Kev, I'll start with you. I don't know if this is one of your topics, but I just wanted to bring it up that you had a pretty busy weekend this weekend. So just maybe tell the listeners a little bit about that. I'm just surprised. I thought for sure, you know, at the time of this recording, it's Tuesday. I thought Kev might back out because he had such a big weekend, but he didn't. It was jam-packed. So Kev, share with us how your weekend went.
I will say there was part of me that really wanted to call into work today.
Yeah.
Just taking it.
I don't doubt it.
So myself and my friends, we ended up doing WrestleMania weekend, and it is bigger than ever and only getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to do it all the time now that I've experienced it. It is like to do it, to go to things is like Disney and the Super Bowl combined.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time. And we just lucked out. So I'm 45, I'll be 46 later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel young. I still feel all right. But my friends I went with, they're not podcast listeners. So I feel a little freedom. One of them was in the emergency room for Christmas for issues and was like scared to death. One of them is the heaviest he's ever been and getting into worse health.
Yeah.
I had a friend die. I had other friends that I know, you know, have gone in for, like one of my friends went in for a simple procedure and woke up a day later. And it's like, what happened? And it turned out they couldn't stop the bleeding. So, like, put him under.
Oof.
But just all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, if I don't do this, you know, here's this opportunity for a short drive with my best friends. If I don't do this, I have this fear of, like, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if it doesn't happen this year, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to feel that mortality and fear for myself and my friends for stuff, which the comment was made, it's like, you gotta stop losing weight. I'm like, why? I'm trying to get healthier here for once in my life.
Exactly.
But we ended up one of my friends travels a ton, a obscene amount for his job, so he ends up getting like free hotels, free meals, free this, free that, travel packages, all sorts of stuff.
Nice.
So he was coordinating everything. And I'm like, all right, I can take the time off. We can drive down. We can meet up and be taken care of, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yep.
So we head down. We ended up doing 7 shows in 4 days.
Wow.
We got there, met up at the hotel, figured out where we were going next,
mm-hmm.
went to the first show, which was Bloodsport. That was from an independent company.
Okay.
GCW sponsored it. So it's a guy that does like a bunch of MMA training and has trained a bunch of wrestlers. And once a year, he cherry picks who he wants to be on the show.
Okay.
And they take down the ropes and they do it in a wrestling ring, but kind of mixed martial arts style. So it's quote unquote real.
Yeah.
But it's not drop kicks. It's not flippy moves off the ropes. It's grappling, you know? So we watched it last year on TV and we're like, this thing's awesome. We get a chance to see it live. We got it. And, you know, here this opportunity came up. So we had there, I had people I really wanted to see. I was excited. We were sitting up on the stage. It kind of looked like a high school gym. Like, here's where the the stage would usually have the production going on during a, you know, high school play, but they just put seats up there. So we were sitting up there watching everything. And we're watching, I was like, oh, this person's on, this person's on. Now, it was crazy because one of the things they announced is a WWE wrestler that she didn't have any match for WrestleMania. They allowed her to work the show.
Oh.
Because it's her former trainer.
Yeah.
And so there's people from other companies like AEW, Ring of Honor, TNA Impact. Like, other companies have people on the show. So the contracts were obscene. Like, you can work with this person, but you can't work with this person, you know? And there was another WWE guy that they had let work the show, too, that was a surprise. So we're just like, oh, my gosh, this is, like, one wrestler from every company, pretty much, coming here. Like, I can't believe they've pulled this off, and that's the first show we're watching. All of a sudden, we see, like, a group of women come in. We're like, oh, it's kind of weird. You don't see a group of women at wrestling things, to a group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like a substantial group coming in. Like, that's kind of weird. And they come up the stage, and the stage we're on, not only is our seats, it's got like the production area there. So the guy that owns the company's there. You got people on headsets calling out stuff to the referees or calling out stuff to the internet feed that it's on and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is kind of cool to just, you know, see behind the curtain in a way here. So they're ushering the girls up to that area. It's all these women that are WWE wrestlers that were there to watch their friend.
Awesome.
So we had about 10 of the WWE women wrestlers sitting right behind us cheering on their friends.
That's cool.
I'm like, this is ridiculous. You got, like, this is show one.
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me. And then all of a sudden some guy in a pink hoodie sneaks in and just wants to sit with the production guys and just watch the match and hang out and kind of be off to the side unseen. And it's CM Punk.
Huh.
Just sitting 10 feet away from us hanging out.
Yeah.
I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So that show was incredible. That show was so damn cool. About two and a half hour show, you know, in a little like, it looked like a place that have like elks meetings or, you know, something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like a lodge area, you know?
Yeah.
So we had a tight time frame, and the next show was over at the ECW arena, which it's not called that anymore, but that's what it is. Like, if you ever watch ECW in the '90s, it's their home arena.
Okay.
So we get there, show up, got there just in time. And we're like, all right, cool, got our seats situated. Every match had a surprise on it. Like, oh, here's the FBI, the old tag team from ECW, is fighting Los Boricuas, which was a Puerto Rican faction in WWE in the 90s as well.
Okay.
Savio Vega and friends. So we're like, all right, this is just a silly, you know, old school kind of match here.
Yeah.
And the Boricua's, one of the guys' daughters are wrestlers now. Like, she looks like 24, maybe.
Hmm.
So they bring her out to wrestle. And FBI's like, well, we need someone, too. So all of a sudden, this woman that works for AEW comes out. And she's their secret partner.
Hmm.
Completely unannounced. We're like, you gotta be kidding me. So they had all sorts of moments like that. Like, here's the match that's happening, and then this person comes out to manage or to be a special referee or you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Cut an interview, stuff like that. Paul, what the heck's his name? Paul Walter Hauser, the actor. I think he won, like, a Golden Globe or an Emmy or something earlier in the year.
Okay.
He's a huge wrestling fan, and he ended up working the show, working, like, a death match.
Huh.
So, like, he's going through tables, he's going through doors, he's using chairs. I'm like, this is absurd.
Yeah.
So that match had, you know, a ton of shenanigans and everything going on. And lights go out, lights come back on, and the music starts. They start playing Enter Sandman. So we're hearing Enter Sandman in the ECW arena, which means Sandman's about to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, that's so cool. So, you know, we know he's going to come out, he's going to be in the crowd, he's going to do his whole, like, drinking beer through the crowd and smashing, you know, the cans on his skull and swinging the Singapore cane, like, the whole shtick.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for it, and we're like, where is he? Where is he? We're looking around, looking to left, looking right. All of a sudden, myself and my friend sitting next to me, we can feel someone putting their hands on our shoulders. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, did we do something wrong?
Yeah.
No, it's Sandman coming up behind us, using us as leverage to get himself up on a chair.
Nice.
So like, you gotta be kidding me.
So he was sitting behind you the whole time?
No, he snuck in. So he came out for backstage and snuck up behind us to do it.
That's cool.
And then did his whole entrance and all. And we're like, this is absurd.
Yeah.
Went back, passed out right away, got up in the morning, having breakfast at the hotel, and it was WrestleCon was going on at the hotel. Anyone not under WWE contract is doing this convention, pretty much. It's like a little Comic-Con, but it's just wrestling stuff.
Yeah.
So they had two floors, two of their like meeting hall areas are just blocked off for nothing but the convention stuff. So there's like, here are these companies that sell, you know, wrestling titles, wrestling shirts, wrestling whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own rooms, like they're like a pop-up store. And then in like the ballroom, whatever area is like a convention. So here's one level that's retired wrestlers, independent wrestlers, you know, ones from other companies just doing photos and meet and greets and selling 8x10s and everything. And then the other floor is like, here's the higher end meet and greet opportunities. The Hardy Boys had lines that wrapped around the room and out the door.
Wow.
The entire weekend. The RetroCon would run from like 9 to 2 or 9 to 3 every day, because then they close up so people could get to the shows they were working.
Yeah.
The Hardys stayed 2 hours extra every day because that's how long their lines were.
That's cool. My son was a big fan of Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, he looked cool.
Yeah.
Like, he just came in looking cool. Sting was there doing autographs. Like, but they had a professional photo opportunity and autograph session. Like, you had to have a ticket and a special thing going. Those ones were $200.
Wow. Like,
out of your freaking... Yeah. But they sold out. So, like, Sting did one. Ronda Rousey did one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, there's so many people. So I'm seeing stuff like, oh, here's a wrestling video game and you can play it for free. And if you want to buy one, cool. Here's someone just selling like old DVDs. Here's someone selling old shirts. Mm-hmm. And then here's Sergeant Slaughter sitting there. And you can get like your wrestling stuff autographed or your G.I. Joe stuff autographed by him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's Trish Stratus and Lita looking beautiful.
Oh, just, wow.
Standing there, signing autographs, taking pictures with fans, hanging out and all.
Yeah.
And then we're having breakfast, and I go to get breakfast with one of my friends. I'm like, Jake Snake Roberts is sitting right here.
Cool.
Eating breakfast with his crew.
Yeah.
Here's the Rock and Roll Express eating breakfast with their group. It's just, it's full of nothing but wrestlers meeting. Like, they were all staying in the hotel, too. So they're just meeting up, having food. The bar area of the hotel packed every night. It's nothing but the wrestlers hanging out, catching up with each other, and then fans just like getting in on the conversation or goofing around or just having their own drinks with their own crew. I'm like, it's like a family reunion here for these guys.
That's really
this
cool.
This is incredible. So we did the convention, saw a ton of people, headed out to our first show on Friday. That was Tokyo Joshi Pro. It's an all-women's promotion out of Japan.
Hmm.
I loved it. My friends had no idea what they were getting into.
Yeah.
One of my friends hated it. The other one was okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, not his thing, but he could still appreciate it. My one friend hated it.
Huh.
Did not, like, just didn't get it.
Yeah.
He's like, who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? I go, I don't know. It's tiny little women from Japan beating the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Left that show, kind of like in between, we explored Philadelphia for a bit. WWE rented out the entire convention center. Half was their store, which was massive. And the other half was like a traveling museum thing. So here's the old ECW set. Here's the old In Your House set. Here's the car that Eddie Guerrero drove out on. Here's a giant display of every belt they've ever had.
Wow.
And, like, the real ones.
Yeah.
Here's this, like, 360 motion camera thing that we will hand you a belt that you can hold, and then we'll do, like, a 360 video of you. That's... with the belt and, like, splay now.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, hey, by the way, here's one line for autographs. You don't know who's going to be in it. Well, I mean, like, here's who's going to be in it that day, but you kind of don't know the exact time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another line for, like, photos of people and all. Also, Hulk Hogan signed an autograph.
Hmm.
You know, Seth Rollins signed autographs. They go and they have a stage. They did the Slammy Awards. Here's the, you know, the biggest return of the year, the match of the year, whatever. Wrestlers are coming out to accept their awards.
Yep.
That show ended. They ended up having Mattel came out and they're like, here's all of our new figures this year. Cool. For wrestling.
Yeah.
And did like a whole presentation. The Pat McAfee show, which is on ESPN, and the Michael Kay show, which is on ESPN and the YES Network, just set up their TV booth at the show, and they just were there live all week long.
Hmm.
Doing their regular, you know, ESPN shows. Like,
yep.
This is absurd. Friday night was Ring of Honor. We watched that pay-per-view. We saw new champions get crowned. Like, this is nuts. Went back, passed out, had breakfast again with wrestlers, saw people at the WrestleCon, went to NXT. NXT is mm-hmm. WWE's, like, minor league thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Wells Fargo Center, which is where the 76ers and the Flyers play.
Okay, yeah.
Got done with that. Turned out we didn't have to move the car because the giant Lincoln Field, which is where Philadelphia Eagles play, is right next door. It's literally across the parking lot.
Hmm.
We're like, all right, well, we're already here for Mania then.
Yeah.
So they have this giant, like, restaurant bar building that's looked the size of a stadium on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Across the parking lot the other way. And we're like, all right, let's go over there, see if we can get some food or something like that. There's thousands of people trying to get in.
Yeah.
And we're like, God, there's no point leaving.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point leaving, getting stuck in traffic. So let's just see what we can find. We're going around the block thinking that, like, we'll find other places to go.
Mm-hmm.
If we go around this building, like, then it'll open up to, like, other storefronts or restaurants or something. Like, we can't tell. We're just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Instead, we find there's a separate entrance that, because all the fans were coming one direction, they're all clogged up at this one entrance, like, let's say, the north side.
Yeah.
But we're going around. So there's thousands of people trying to get into this restaurant area, whatever, from the north side. We go around to the south side of the building. There's, like, two people in front of us. We snuck right in.
Nice.
Got in there. Downstairs is packed. We see an upstairs. We go up, see a waitress, and we're like, hey, we just wanted to, like, get dinner, pretty much. She's like, if you guys are getting food, she's like, if you're just getting drinks, we're not dealing with it. If you're getting food, I'll sit you down right now. We go, all right, we're getting food.
Yep.
I think this will be it. And like, here's this place jam-packed right by the stadiums and all. And like, my dinner's like $15.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you gotta be kidding me. Like, dirt cheap pricing all weekend. Yep. I don't know how. Like, I'm expecting overpriced New York City prices, pretty
yeah.
much, you know? Nothing. Yeah. We're sitting there, we're all eating. All of a sudden, I'm facing the wall, watching the TVs. One of my friends is facing out, watching the bar. He stands up and pulls out his camera. I'm like, what the heck is going on behind me? Freaking Ric Flair comes in. Right next to where we're sitting is a podcast studio that overlooks the bar, and Ric Flair was the guest.
Cool.
So he just comes right in. I'm like 2 feet away from him, if that. We haven't even made it to Mania yet.
That's awesome.
You gotta be kidding me. Went to Mania Saturday night. It was like 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Freaking cold. Windy. And it comes across on TV. Like, a lot of people said, why? You know, oh, are the fans not into it? Are they hating it? No, it was cold.
Yeah.
That's why. Somehow made it back to the hotel in 10 minutes that night. Don't know how. Sunday, did the convention again. Did breakfast again. Met other people. Had a blast. Went to Mania Sunday night. Much better show. So exciting to watch it. Much warmer, too. Everyone was just in a better mood and more excited. And honestly, I think the second night had the better card of matches, too.
Okay.
And just had a blast. Took us 2 hours to get out of that one, though. I don't know why the difference.
Everyone just wanted to warm up, maybe the first night. Guess. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's actually a good point. You're probably right. Woke up Monday super early because we're trying to make it back in time for the eclipse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And ended up, we got stuck in traffic once, which we thought was for the eclipse. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. There's no way the traffic's backed up 100 miles for the eclipse. It wasn't. It was like 5 miles for construction.
Oh.
And it just took a while to get out of that.
Yeah.
And then we're getting close to Syracuse, New York, and we get all these alerts on our phones and travel apps and, you know, stuff like that. And it's pretty much avoid Syracuse right now to not get stuck in eclipse traffic. So now we're on, like, these back road county route things to make it home. And between the two things, we were, like, 90 minutes behind where we wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
I got dropped off. I was, like, I got an hour before the eclipse is full. I got hold of my kid. I said, you know, are you somewhere you can watch it? Are you with mom? Like, do you want me to get your whatever? He was all set. I said, cool. I dropped off my bags. I walked downtown in my hometown. It just took like a 10-minute walk. And this historical fort, they had the park rangers out there handing out free solar glasses, doing like presentations, explaining the science behind it, doing a countdown, telling you how much you're. We're at 20% right now. We're at 30%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like really giving like a walkthrough and speeches and everything for it. There was a few hundred people there. Just everyone just laid on the grass and watched it. And it was really amazing. Cloudy, not overcast, but like it'd be really cool. And then all of a sudden, a cloud's going by, and you got to wait a minute, and then you could see more of it again.
Yeah.
And I think about 98-99% totality. We didn't get 100% where I was, but amazing.
Like, yeah.
Just a surreal experience. I had to take glasses off and look around. I'm like, street lights are coming on. It is 3:00 in the afternoon and street lights are coming on.
Yeah.
Because it's that dark. The temperature has dropped at least 15 degrees.
That's awesome.
And just the couple minutes of this, I'm like, this is just so surreal. This is an amazing thing. I'm so glad I got to do it. Walking home, like when it was all set, my son called me again. Did you see him? Like, I did. We talked for a good half hour just about how we felt about seeing this amazing feat of nature.
Yeah.
But, and then honestly, I was falling asleep during Raw last night. I was talking to one of my friends. He said, because Raw was really cool too. He's like, we should have stayed. I said, I know. It's debating. Like, I mean, that wasn't, you know, in the plans, so we couldn't have.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it would have been really cool to stay. And meanwhile, here I am, like, 9 o'clock, just passing out on the couch. Like, I can't move.
Yeah.
Chris, I'll say I did fall in love a couple times.
Yeah?
A couple times. A lot of the indie wrestlers there taking pictures with fans. It was so funny. Some of them, I'm like, all right, you're here to make, you know, you're here to make money. You're here to... Mm-hmm. Whatever, like, that's clearly all that's there, and then you want to get as far away from here as possible. And then there were some of them that were just, like, hanging out. Like, there was one, I was like, this girl's just sitting, like, just talking with us, like, she came with us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just hanging out, bullshitting with us, telling stories and everything, goofing around. I'm like, it's like she just came down with us, and we've known her for years.
Yeah.
Like, this is so cool. So just it depended on who you met there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some were just there like, I'm here because I just want to make money and I don't want to actually interact with anyone or deal with anyone. And as soon as I can get out of here, I am. And some were like, this is fun.
Yeah.
And I'm having a blast and I just wanted to go around and meet everyone and talk to everyone. And it was just a very interesting vibe. Like, once you knew the difference, it was like, okay, these are the cool people, and these are people to avoid.
Yeah.
Like, Jake Roberts left early one day because no one was at his table.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you do every show. Eventually, you're going to get to the point where people have already gotten your autograph.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? But, like, he seemed really just like, it's a waste of my time to be here. And took off. But he also, he had his wife, girlfriend, whatever, and I don't want to say a handler, but someone that was clearly like, not in charge either, but someone taking care of all the stuff for him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, all right, so you got three people in this group here, and he's just ready to be done, but he's not interacting with anyone other than the two people at his table. He's not even talking to like other wrestlers. Turned out he was, but I missed it. But I'm like,
yeah,
he just looks miserable. And then you had other people that were just walking around and shaking hands with everyone, high-fiving and doing selfies and just having a blast.
Well, how was Jake? Like, he's still doing the Diamond Dallas Page thing? Like, he still looks good? And
He's on oxygen. He had to carry around the tank with him everywhere he was going.
Yeah.
But he seemed... I mean, he seems his age.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem messed up.
Oh, that's good.
He seemed like, okay, he's an older guy and he's got some health issues. That's what he looked like. Not, you know, oh, he's a drug addict.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's completely understandable. I mean, aside from the wrestling life, you know, like wrestling itself, but, you know, he lived a hard life for many years. So even if you are... and, you know, get back into shape and you're eating healthy and stuff, old age is going to still catch up with you.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like, you know, when we were younger and you see Grandpa and, he struggles to get out of a chair.
Yeah.
You know, but he looked like that. He looked like his age.
Yeah.
Lex Luger looked horrible.
Oh.
I forget what he has, but, I mean, he looks like he weighs 150 pounds maybe now.
Oh.
Like 150, maybe 180 is pushing it. Like just very small, very frail. He's got a wheelchair. He looks like maybe he could stand a little bit, but mostly it's a wheelchair in and out of places.
Yeah.
But just very nice, very pleasant with people. Like I didn't go up through, but I could overhear, you know, he just seemed like very chill. What killed me. I mean, like, he's there. Your bigger names are there to make money. Like, a lot of your indie people are just there hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Sting's getting 200 a thing. He's there to make money.
Yeah.
Hardy's were, like, 100, let's say. They're there to make money. So, I mean, that's also why I'm like, I'm not bothering with any of them. I can meet up with cool indie people and just hang out.
Yeah.
And maybe this cool indie person's WWE next year, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I was enjoying the hanging out with people thing, but I understood why people wanted to spend their money to meet these people. That's totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Hardy's probably could pay like their mortgage for the year off of what they made just from that weekend.
Yeah.
You know, like crazy amount of money. Luger probably has tons of medical bills that he's got to pay. We saw him outside where getting in the car to go somewhere else. We see Luger struggling, balancing himself to get into the passenger side of a car for whoever was driving him away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, like seeing a grandparent struggling to get in or out of a vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got concentrate, he's got both hands, you know, like one hand on the seat, one hand on the door, just struggling to get himself in. And he's going into the car at a weird angle because then he can sit down in it and then swing his legs around, you know, like.
Yeah.
It's a production. It's going to take him a while. And some freaking fan is shoving 8x10s and a marker in his face. I'm like, if you wanted him to sign something, now is not the time when he's barely getting into a vehicle.
Yeah.
And two, he was just upstairs 15 minutes ago. You could have done it then.
That's the thing. Like,
it bothered the hell out of me.
It would bother me, too.
I got to see amazing things. Cool stuff, and I got to see jerks too. You know, I saw both sides of it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And I had a long talk. Indie wrestling. I had a long talk. This indie wrestling woman. She works for TNA Impact and AEW and all. And I'm just like, why? I said, I was enjoying talking to her so much. I said, I just want to tell you how much I'm enjoying talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, some of the wrestlers are here with tons of attitude, and it kind of brings it down. I said, and some of these fans are being horrible. I said, but there's cool people here, too. And she's like, I was thinking the same thing. I go, oh, geez. Like, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
She's like, there are some fans that just drive me absolutely insane. She's like, there's some of the wrestlers. I'm not going to say who because they're my peers. I'm just like, then why are you here? If you're not having fun, then why are you even here?
Yeah. Well,
and she's like, yeah. And then there's cool people. She's like, there's cool people like you that get it and we can hang out and talk. No. Yeah. The problem is I want to do it again. And I'm like, oh, this isn't actually feasible. Like stuff just kind of worked out this year that I didn't really have to pay, but I'm like, oh, I wanted to actually do it.
Yeah, for sure. That, I mean, it sounds awesome.
They're going to do Vegas in a couple of years is the rumor. I highly recommend it to anyone.
Excellent.
If you're into it, it's absolutely worth it.
Perfect.
Sorry, that was very long.
No. Absolutely. No problem.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area. I love you so
badly. They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP. Got kind of tired packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the dial.
And we are back on the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris. And joining me again is Mr. Kevin Decent. It's just the two of us. We didn't get any more extra guests, unfortunately. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. So Kev, 2 days have passed. Yeah. How's things going in your neck of the woods?
Going all right, but we're in this very odd spring season here. And New York's just, I always feel like it's weird the way we go through it. Like, we're definitely a big April shower, springs, May flowers area, because it's been raining on and off for like probably since we talked last.
Okay.
Raining just on and off the whole time. The problem is, and I don't know for buildings you've had to work in or anything like that, a lot of these buildings, schools, office buildings, stuff like that, are set on certain timers for the air conditioner runs like for these months and the heater runs for these months. But yep. That doesn't factor in random heat, random cold times, climate change, anything like that. So today, for example, our heat is still running, even though we don't need it to be running anymore at work.
Yeah.
It's still running, assuming it's still winter time. So the heat is kicked on, but it's 67, it was like 65, 67, whatever, outside. But our heat's still running, so between the two and whatever other factors, it was 85 degrees and climbing inside of our office.
Oof.
And it just kept getting Fahrenheit, obviously, yeah. For you know, everyone else on there, maybe the dumb American.
Yeah.
But it kept climbing, and we're like, okay, what's the setting? And it turned out we were finding out through inter-office communication stuff that like numerous offices were having this happen, where it's like it's still set by whatever group controls all the HVAC equipment, stuff like that. Like, it's still set to heat right now, even though we don't need it. It's not set to cool, which is what we do need right now, and it's just screwing everything up. And I'm just like, I'm ready to pass out at work. I'm in a tie. I'm dressed up. It keeps getting hotter. And I was like, but there's nothing we can do because it's all set by these, like, you know, other companies or whatever is contracted out, or, you know, however these business dealings go for all this equipment. And I remember school, when I was in school, some of them were like that. Like, oh, we, even though we're having a random heat wave in, you know, like March, we can't turn on AC until May, you know, or like stuff like that. just the way things were set up.
Yeah.
And like I went to a Catholic school, so we had to wear shirts, ties, pants, shoes, you know, all that stuff. And we were having this horrible heat wave once, and like kids passed out at school. And we had, I still remember to this day, the principal went over the you know, speaker system for school, and he's like, due to the heat wave, and it's going to be even worse tomorrow, we are willing to change the school uniforms for the time of the heat wave. We're like, oh, thank God, we can wear like shorts and shirts, you know? Boys are allowed to undo their tie and their top button.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, screw you.
Yeah.
It's not going to help me at all.
You know what's weird is even back then, that wasn't necessary. Like, and like what you're talking about now is not necessary. Like, especially nowadays, like, for those who don't know, I took, as part of my work, I took power engineering, fifth class power engineering. And part of that is HVACs and cooling systems and heating systems. So I know, like, even back when we were kids, and yeah, like, I don't remember, like, it wasn't really like that at my school, but I think I know why. Basically what it is the teachers were never shown how to operate the HVAC equipment or the boiler. Oh. or the furnace, whatever you got for your heating and cooling, they were never shown, right? So they would have to, they probably had a contract with a company that maintained it. So anytime that something had to change, they would have to call someone in. Whereas at my school, I'm pretty sure my vice principal, he was very mechanically inclined. I'm pretty sure he took care of all that kind of stuff. So they didn't have to call anyone in, so he would make adjustments. Like back in those days, it's like analog, you're actually like turning dials and that kind of stuff, right? But nowadays, like I'm sure wherever you're at, like, you know, at your, cause you're at a library, right? Like a nice big, I'm sure it's all digital now, you know, like it might be old equipment, but I'm sure they've tied into it. Like whatever company keeps care of it. Oh, so literally all it would take is a phone call to that company for them to log in and just change a setting on a computer. That's it. It's so simple. And the reason why I know this is because this is what we do where I work. Cause we used to be just analog, right? Like literally we're just, you know, turning dials on thermostats, and then we would like literally go to the HVAC, turn it on, turn it off when we needed it, blah, blah, blah. But I want to say 6 years ago, they got everything digitized. So now we literally log into a website and then we can control our own HVAC settings. The problem we have now is certain guys, you know, that come from warmer climates like it warm. So they will have the heat on when we're having a heat wave. Like they like that. And there's other guys like myself. Like I want to see my breath like in the summertime. Like I want it that cold. Like I'm a Canadian, right? Like my, you know, 100%. Like I've been here all my life. I'm just used to colder. Like hotter climates aren't really great for me. They're nice for vacations, but to actually live in a warmer climate, I don't know if I could do that. Like full time. But yeah, no, like I'm sure, you know, at your library, it's just a matter of contacting the company and it would take someone literally like a minute to change it.
Well, now we're in the bureaucracy phase of it.
Like, yeah.
We can't do it. Maintenance has to take care of stuff and they have to go through their thing and they have to go through their thing and the proper chain of command, for lack of a better term, and paperwork and all that. And it's like, oh.
Yeah,
and because I mean, you know, we were all thinking like, if we knew where it was, we would just do it ourselves. But then all of a sudden, it's going to come back on. You're not allowed to touch it, and you know it's going to be a whole thing.
Well, and that's the problem. Like, you could theoretically go out and like say turn off a fan or something, but then you run the risk of wrecking equipment, right? If it's not working automatically, you know that could happen. But yeah, like it's the bureaucracy, because like I said, where I work, like where my office is, and it's in a control room building. So, you know, we were given basically the keys to the car. Like, we were told, you know, like, the, you know, this is how you do it. But yeah, a lot of, if you went to the admin building, none of them would have an idea how to do it. Like, they would call us to do it for them. And I mean, we would, like, that's the thing. Like, I don't understand, you know, like, somebody must be somewhere thinking to themselves, man, it's warm in here. I wonder if it's warm in that, you know, where Kevin's at. Maybe I should change it for those guys, you know? But yeah, people just, unfortunately, people don't think of other people sometimes. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Like, yeah, this time of year here, we could have showers, we could have snow, but right now we've got neither. And they're talking about heavy winds coming in, so...
So, we also, and I've mentioned it before on this show and other places, I do not remember windstorms when I was younger, but with the way the temperature differences are now, every spring, like spring into summer and fall into winter, but not winter into spring or summer into fall, but your solstice is pretty much, we get horrible windstorms.
Yep.
Every year now. Like house shaking level wind storms.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be raining, it won't be thunder, it won't be anything else. It's just the wind. But when you got, you know, the further north you go for you and for me, when you have possible temperature differences of like 20, 30 degrees in one day,
mm-hmm.
it's going to kick it up and it's going to happen. But, oh, God, I hate it. Nothing more fun than driving and a gust of wind hits you just right.
Yeah. The big thing here, like in Canada is, you know, they're worried about the fire season. So
again?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, we had such a mild winter. We're going to have an abnormally dry spring. Yeah. So fingers crossed. I really hope we don't get fires like we've had, you know, it sucks. It really does.
It's almost like we're all connected.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like, that's we're one planet. And
things what a crazy idea.
Yeah, things affect other places. But anywho, and apologies. I got yearly allergies, but there's certain times it peaks and so on and so forth. But with it being so dry, like, I just, yeah. I got over a cold, but now I'm just, like, kicking into allergies. So yeah, that's what I'm doing. All right. So to get back on track, so I kind of changed my one talk, cause I got two topics. And I changed my one little topic today based on something that happened today. And at the time of this recording, and I'm not making this an in memoriam segment. I'm just stating a fact. O.J. Simpson died. because generally when we do in memoriams, we like to celebrate, you know, people that have passed. And I mean, O.J. Simpson is a pop culture icon, but not necessarily for the best of reasons. For starters, he was, you know, his NFL career, obviously. You know, I know my dad was a big fan of O.J. Simpson. My dad was an NFL guy, you know. He thought he was great. His transition into acting, you know, I knew O.J. Simpson as the guy from the Naked Gun movies. He was the guy that was sidelined in the first movie, and he showed up in the, you know, he was in the second movie and the third movie, and I thought he was hilarious. But I think I was just thinking about this just before we recorded. It was 94 when Nicole Brown Simpson and the other fella died, right?
Something Goldman, wasn't it? Was it Ron Goldman?
Ron Goldman? Yeah, I want to say that, yeah.
Am I right? Oh, let's see. I graduated high school in 96. So I'm probably 94 for death, 95...
For trial.
for trial. Would be, yeah, that seems about right. I'm remembering because I was in school when the verdict came out.
Yeah, and so was I. I remember that. I was just thinking, yeah, we're going on the 30th anniversary of all of that.
Yeah.
And all that, so my topic is, I really believe in karma. You know, I think, you know, like, I studied Buddhism, and I people ask me, you know, what my religious beliefs are, and I say, well, I like to think of myself as an aspiring Christian Buddhist, because there's certain aspects of Christianity I do like, but I just can't get behind it, you know, fully. And Buddhism, you know, there's a lot of things about Buddhism I really like, and one of the concepts of Buddhism is karma. Karma being, you reap what you sow. So if you are a good person, you live a good life, you do good by people, good things will come to you, either in this life or the next. Because that's another thing you got to keep in mind with Buddhism, is they believe in reincarnation, right? And if you are a good person in your life, you'll reincarnate in the next life into a better life. You know, better things will happen to you. So, you know, like, unfortunately, you know, bad things happen to good people. And people say, well, why is that? Well, you know, like, they lived a good life. Why did this person get cancer and die at, you know, 30 years old? Well, unfortunately, you know, according to Buddhism, maybe that person did something bad in their previous life, and now karma has come back and is paying them in this one, unfortunately. Sometimes that's the way it works. I think with, you know, with guys like O.J. Simpson, you know, like, I know he did do some jail time for a different crime. Like, you know, he was trying to get back his memorabilia, and he was, I don't know, beat someone up or something. I just know he did, what was it, 8 years or 10 years, I think?
I want to say eight, but I'm not totally sure there, yeah.
Yeah, so basically, you know, that judge did what all of us wished we could have done, and she, I believe it was a female judge, sentenced him to the maximum that they were able to sentence him for that crime. And I, like, honestly, I think it was because of, you know, who he was. Like, and I mean, that's karma, you know, like, he literally got away with murder. And that's another thing. I'm by no means an expert on the O.J. Simpson trial or anything like that, but I know, talking to my mom, she read a book, I think it was from Nicole Brown's family, and I think Ron Goldman's family wrote a book too, or something along those lines.
Oh, I mean, they all did.
Yeah. But anyway, they had a civil trial, because the criminal trial, he was found not guilty, you know, the whole Judge Ito thing, you know, oh, what the heck was that guy's name? His lawyer. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. That guy.
Johnny Cochran,
yeah. You know, like, it became like the circus, and everyone was a celebrity, and they, you know, it was ridiculous. So because certain things weren't allowed into evidence, and certain things were mishandled, he got away with it. But in the civil trial, those things that got tossed out were brought back in. And I think one of them was DNA. The killer's DNA, I forget what my mom said. According to whatever science, it was like 3 trillion to 1 chance it was O.J. Simpson. So it was absolutely 100% O.J. Simpson, because there's not 3 trillion people on the planet. Like, it has to be him. It can't be anyone else. He literally got away with murder. You know, he did a little stint in prison, but, you know, he for the most part, you know, lived a pretty good life for the last 30 years. But karma came around and it got him. Like, he was 76. I think he had cancer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't wish ill on anybody, but, you know, you do bad things, you know, hopefully karma will get you. And like I said, in this life or the next, because, you know, some people are bad people, and you say to yourself, like, why does this person, nothing ever bad happens to them? You know, they're just the worst. And, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it might be in the next life, maybe not this life. But, you know, I just, what, you know, seeing that today, with him dying, you know, I just thought, a thought of karma, you know, karma finally came into play and finally got him. So anyway, Kev, what are your thoughts on the whole O.J. Simpson thing?
So, I was at work and with the heat, we were just taking frequent breaks today. So of course you take a break at this point at work, you pull out your phone.
Yeah.
No. And I go on Twitter, X, whatever it's called this week, and I see OJ trending, and then I look, and it was like within minutes of the family posting it.
Mm-hmm.
So no one was quite sure yet. And I remember one of the comments there already is, well, I'm sure the internet will react in a fine way to this today, or a respectful way, or whatever it was. And I just laugh, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a mess.
Yeah.
And then I posted, I don't know if you saw it, because what killed me was the local media, and it was the headline, quote, former Bills running back and actor has passed. And I'm like, you sure that's it?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, that's all he's done?
Yeah.
I've gotten better in my old age.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say this is not a rant against anything, but I also feel in my age I'm seeing connections.
Mm-hmm.
This is one thing, but here's how we ended up with other things because of it. And I kind of feel like O.J. Simpson and that whole circus that happened is why we have all these reality shows today.
Oh, yeah.
Because of everyone watching 24/7. My grandfather was obsessed. He was just so involved, and every day he had to watch.
Yeah.
And, like, thank God, you know, the sports that he liked to watch, like the golf tournaments and all, were on weekends when there wasn't court proceedings on TV.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, all the 24-hour news channels, the court channels, everything else had this ratings juggernaut of all the OJ stuff, and then it ended. And it's like, well, what do we do now? Let's find more over-the-top, ridiculous characters, scandalous stuff, things to draw people in. And we got entire networks and channels devoted to all that stuff today. And I really feel like it goes back to OJ and this trial, and in a way, like, nothing against certain kinds of reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain kinds that make sense and are fun, and nothing against escapism. But that's not what so much of it is. It's like, there's so much that is, here's horrible and or stupid people doing horrible and or stupid things, and you're going to watch it. Because we're putting it out there on TV. And, like, it doesn't... I mean, there are trials that are interesting and are good to have out there for the public to understand and see what's happening and maybe have a bit of healing happen.
Yeah.
But the OJ one just got worse and worse and worse and just became more of a mockery of things.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this giant joke, and then we have all these, not all of them, again, some stuff is good out there, but a majority of all this reality stuff that's also a joke. And why is it out there?
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there's the the whole dumbing down of society stuff, hell, I think the OJ trial is part of it.
Yep.
Like, as much as some people were like, oh, I want to watch this very interesting court case, you end up with, and it's me using this reference, but like these comic book characters here come in and, oh, you know, it's just slapstick stuff. And I think, you know, in a way, the damage done to generation, country, whatever, for this becoming this massive thing is still felt today. Even the freaking car chase.
Mm-hmm.
There's shows all the time that's just like world's most dangerous police chases, like all this stuff, because now they know people will sit and watch that.
Yep.
And I love wrestling. Like, I watch dumb shit. You know, I'm not placing myself above anyone. Like, just because your dumb stuff is not my dumb stuff does not mean it's bad. But, you know, you can't eat chocolate or candy for every calorie in every meal and every bit during the day. You need something of substance.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like you trace it back, and you can trace back to all this, you know, nothingness that people consume.
Yeah.
I had forgotten. Now, I'll also say, reading up some stuff today, I forgot about the Hertz Rent-A-Car commercials where he's running through the airport.
Mm.
And he was, like, there's so much stuff that he should have been a hero, and it should have been an icon, and today should have been a sad day.
Yes, yep.
You know, but, like, oh, he was the first black person in a huge advertising program that they're like, oh, we can use black people, too. Like, a groundbreaker for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the NFL records that he had and all this stuff, and, like, that should have, for all the stuff, honestly, even the movies, everything, his life before that murder, that alone, if he did nothing else, he just went off to retirement and lived in a home, and every so often he, you know, signed footballs for people, that life alone today would have been like American icon and hero. O.J. Simpson has died.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have gotten his flowers, and he would have gotten his acclaim, and grown men would have cried over it. But boy, that's a big, there's a big thing in the middle there, though.
Oh, yeah.
And then the stuff that happened later on where, you know, beating people up and assaulting people in hotels. And like, God, what a 180 for first half of life, second half of your life.
Yep.
Like the hero to the villain.
Yep. And it should be noted, like, during that civil trial, he was supposed to pay those families money. Like, he was supposed to compensate, and it never happened. Never happened. Like, just blows my mind that he was allowed to blow all that money. It's weird that it wouldn't have been seized. You know, like, that he could just go through that money and...
Well, like, you look at people that, they fall into debt, and they get, like, a lien on their house. Like, they have an asset that's frozen.
Yeah.
Or taken, or whatever.
Yep.
So why doesn't it happen to someone like OJ?
Exactly.
You know, it happens to your common people that are like, oh, I had medical debt, or I got laid off of my job, or whatever. Like, I'm struggling. I'm trying to get caught up. And it's just like the system just rolls them over,
mm-hmm.
or rolls over them. But then you got someone like OJ there that's just like, yeah, screw it. I don't care. I'm not going to bother. And no one comes after him.
Yep. That's the thing.
I mean... Yeah, money does crazy things.
So yeah, no. I was going to say money talks. Yeah.
No.
So a couple things before I close out. One, when I was reading the story, and this has to be AI or somebody programming it this way, but I click on the story. The story comes up, and you'll never guess what the ad was beside it.
Oh, God.
It was an ad for Ford Bronco.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm. I'm not even joking. I'm like, this cannot be a coincidence. Like, this has got to be AI or somebody set this to this. Because, you know, I click on the story and it's advertising Ford Broncos on the side of my screen. And then, so on a tangent, talking about reality shows. One thing that always drives me nuts about reality cooking shows, because my wife loves reality cooking shows. She'll watch those things.
Okay.
I hate how...
Now, we mean like the competition cooking shows. Not
yeah.
Like, not like Giada or Rachel Ray or whoever's like, no. Oh, I'm gonna bake chicken today. Not like those, but like the reality competition cooking.
Yeah, the competition cooking shows. I guess I'm more of a Rachel Ray person or, oh, what's that? We have an equivalent up here in Canada. What's her name? Berg something. Anyway, she's this cook that, you know, a Canadian, I grew up watching a program called Walk with Jan. It was awesome. Yep. You remember?
It was on PBS here.
Oh, okay.
PBS here. Yep.
Oh man, I love that show. I always wanted to go into that studio. Because, you know, like at the end of the show, he picks somebody from the audience and they get to eat with him.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be that person. Like, yeah, it was on CBC up here in Canada, Walk with Jan. I used to love that show. But these competition shows, I don't get it. Like, why? I would rather watch a competition show between, like, say, two bakeries. Like, I need a birthday cake. This is the specifications, make it. And then both of them bring you the cake and you decide which one's the best. To me, that's the competition. But when you start, you know, you got 20 minutes, you can only use these ingredients, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, I guess you're showing the skills of their creativity. But I don't think that's a good gauge of how good of a chef or a cook someone is. Like if bakery A, it takes them 2 hours to make the cake I wanted. It takes 2 hours. You know, I don't need it done in 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. And say bakery B, it takes them 8 hours to do the same type of cake or their version of the cake. It shouldn't matter. Like I hate this time thing and using that and then all these little caveats to gauge if someone's a good chef. I really don't think that's accurate. You know, like Hell's Kitchen I can kind of respect because, yeah, like you have to cook fast. You know, you got people waiting, that sort of thing. But it's more these competitions where it's like baking and stuff where it just drives me nuts because it's like I don't want my bakers rushing. I want them to take their time and figure shit out to make the best possible product they can. I don't know. It's just something, because my wife watches so many, it just drives me nuts when I see these things. I'm like, ugh, this is not a proper gauge on how good a person is, you know?
Well, it's funny how stuff throughout the day, throughout the week, ends up coming through in our conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was talking to this person, and it's bringing me to points now. There's a more upcoming testing, not for me, I'm good with tests for work, but for other positions. And one of the tests is, you're given a question, you have 30 minutes to answer it. They don't care how you find the research and how you discover it, as long as you get to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much whether I answer the question of 2 + 2 and you answer it 3 + 1, we both are correct because we got to 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter that we did it two different ways. We both have the same answer. So like some of this cooking stuff, all right, it took you this amount of time to make this delicious food. It took me this amount of time to make this delicious food. What's it matter that one of us took longer than the other? The food's still amazing in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
So what does it matter?
Yep.
I liked the original Iron Chef, the Japanese one. But that's because I liked watching like anime and random stuff like this. And it was just, it was so weird and different. And having the voiceover. And it was just, it was so weird or strange. Doesn't is not correct, but just seeing a different culture that way,
mm-hmm.
and seeing this competition way of doing it, and at the time of the original Iron Chef, there wasn't other ones like this.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is fun and cool. Watching it now, I'm bored because there's been 500 other versions of these shows.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just not into it now. But when I first discovered it, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But it's not, you know, like, you can make something quick. It doesn't mean it, well, you got, you know, here's the challenge. You got it done in 10 minutes. You took 30 minutes. Yeah, but the 30-minute one's probably going to taste better.
Yeah.
My kid was just talking to me earlier today, and he's like, Dad, I'm enjoying pizza now, and I think the reason I didn't like it before is because I'm having Little Caesars.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's probably like, oh, we're having a bunch of cheap pizza for a kid's birthday party. Yeah, if I got to buy pizza for 20 kids, I'm buying the cheapest pizza I can.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's what he thinks pizza is, and he's like, this sucks.
Yep.
I'm thinking, yeah, buddy, because it's a $6 pizza that's sitting in a warming tray that you can grab any time. It's not going to be good.
Yeah.
It's just there to get the job done. Like, oh, I just need something quick and easy right now.
Yep.
And I told him, I said, if we're getting french fries somewhere, do you want the McDonald's french fries or Five Guys? He's like, I want Five Guys. I go, yeah, because it takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
There's more quality to it. And he's starting to understand that.
Yeah.
Like, getting the quick, easy thing does not mean you're getting quality or you get something good. And me, honestly, for food stuff, for cooking shows, for whatever, I don't care how long it takes. If the handful of cooking shows I'll watch, nothing's like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, I need to watch this. But, you know, if I'm bored and flipping through channels, it's more like showing things off. It's more food porn. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh my God, that looks amazing. Like, I've wasted a Saturday watching barbecue shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are awesome.
Here's the smoked one, and here's the giant setup, and here's it falling off the bone, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so pretty.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have it in Canada, if it's crossover for any of the channels, but I'll kill an hour or so watching Man vs. Food.
I think we do have, I think that is on the Food Network, I'm pretty sure, up here.
Okay, yep, because yeah. I enjoy seeing these ridiculous things. But I'm also like, I would try that. I might be really fat one day and see if I could eat that in a sitting, you know, if I was at that restaurant.
Yeah.
It looks pretty, though. It's presented well. It looks cool. I never once thought, oh, did it take them an hour or 2 minutes to make this?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple up here that I do enjoy watching. Like, there's, Diners,
Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And it's there's been a few in Edmonton that have been featured on that. And there's, like, a roadside cafe between Edmonton and Calgary that was on there as well. Then we also got Carnival's Treats and Eats or something.
Oh, I don't know what's called. My brother loves that one. I don't know what's called, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
he loves it. He got my mom into it.
Yeah, that host, I know he's a Canadian guy. I really like him because he used to, like, guest host on the global morning show, like the national morning show.
Mm-hmm.
I always wish that they would have just made him the host, because it was always great when he was on. He was hilarious. But yeah, stuff like that. But yeah, I think with the getting back to the competitions, I think because you were talking about testing and stuff, I always have anxiety when I'm doing a timed test.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, like in high school doing the diploma exams, you know, when I did my fifth class power engineering, like, I had 3 hours. And I'm that type of guy, I go right down to the last minute. Like, I just, I have to. Like, I just, so watching these competition shows where it's timed, like, I guess maybe that brings out that anxiety in me. But, anywho, sorry, go ahead, Kev.
No, just anxiety and timed. All right, I set my alarm for 7 to wake up to get ready for work.
Mm-hmm.
On a work day, 7 o'clock hits, I hit snooze. I'm like, I'm so tired, I can't get out of bed. But if I wake up on my own at 7 a.m. on a Saturday or Sunday, I'm fine. Because the anxiety is gone of I need to be here at a certain time or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
The you know, that clock ticking down, the timed response, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, Kev, let's switch gears. And what is your second topic for this evening?
All right. I fear this is a bigger one. But it's just been on my mind since my trip.
Okay.
And, it's going to be changing how I do things. I need to sit down and do it and adjust it, which I haven't taken the time yet. But it bothered me so much. I was in multiple crowds last week with multiple different people, people I was with, people around me, people all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how some people react to things and how some people enjoy things and all. There's a lot of people that spent a lot of money to stare at their phones in a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm bad with social media too. There's many a night where I'm like, oh, I can't sleep. And next thing I know, an hour's gone by. And I'm like, I should have tried to go to sleep or read a book or something like better than sitting and scrolling on my phone the whole time, and we all do it. But I think it was seeing it in that way made it not look like a habit or a casual thing. It made it look to me like addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize it is. But like, I know gambling's an addiction. I don't gamble. I never got into it. I know alcohol can, drug use can, things that are more obvious and we're more aware of. And, you know, I've seen stuff in my own family. I know what to avoid. I have never done certain things in my life because I'm like, I don't know what, you know, I know there's histories of things in my family. I don't know if it's genetic and I share that gene. It's not for me anyways. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going down that road. But the phones and the social media and the need to connect, I'm like, I'm seeing people scroll through Facebook and I'm like, there are thousands of people around you in person. Connect with them. Like, if you're picking up your phone to take pictures of thing going on, that's cool. That makes sense. Our phones are our best cameras. Like, mm-hmm. of course, you know, take a picture, keep the memories. I knew for like some of the shows I went to, I'm in a Discord group, and I knew some of the people in there were watching the things on TV. So, okay, match is over. We got a couple minutes while everyone kind of resets. Let mm-hmm. me hop on there quick and see what they're saying. Like, oh, it came across so cool. Oh, this was really neat. Like, just to get the reaction as yep. if I'm turning to my right and talking to my friends for. And then I would look for a minute. Okay, they liked it. They hated it, whatever. Oh, hey, they mentioned this thing going on. And then, oh, I didn't notice that watching it live. It's so interesting that that was on camera. Look for a minute, close it up again, pay attention to what's going on in front of me. Like, I'm doing it during downtime. I'm doing it I don't want to call it intermission, but a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the only time I'm not paying attention is during an actual downtime. But I'm seeing people on there the whole time. I'm like, you're not getting an important message from family. You know, a president or prime minister didn't just die and we're trying to figure out what's going on. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's no reason to just scroll through your phone and be like, oh, I see my friend Susie ordered a ham sandwich today. Like, who?
Yeah.
Like, why not be in the moment? And I know I've been bad with that stuff too. I don't think any of us can get rid of social media at this point. That's how I met you. That's how I've met the people I've met through you. That's how I've met mm-hmm. other podcasters and creators and stuff.
Yep.
Like, it's needed in a certain respect, but it's also needed to live. Like, we see each other's posts all day long, but having these conversations
mm-hmm.
means more than just clicking like.
Yeah, exactly.
On something. You know? And I felt inspired by this weekend, and I'm kind of, yeah, I want to podcast more, and I want to write more, and I want to create more, and I'm just trying to figure out making the time for it, and what angle, and how can I stand out from the crowd and do something different and be noticed and seen and build an audience. And like, I got all sorts of energy for it, and I'm just trying to harness it. It's like right now I have like the molten metal, and I'm I'm hammering it into whatever shape it's going to be, and it's just not quite there yet. And that's how I'm feeling from it. And then I got other people that's like, oh, I didn't see what's going on. I'm like, yeah, because you're on your fucking phone.
Yeah,
that's why you didn't see it. And it's just, it's something about it's bothering me so much. I mean, I am talking to you on the same phone I'm complaining about right now.
Yeah, but you know, you're like, but you're using it productively currently.
My son wants to be a famous YouTuber. I'm trying to figure out stuff because we did a video Tuesday and it was fun and we had a blast. But rewatching it today, I'm like, oh, like I'm just feeling cringe for it. I was like, oh, that sucks. That's bad. We messed that up and all. I'm like, okay, how can I make this look better for us?
Yeah.
I want him to feel pride about it. I want to feel better about it. I'm debating rearranging my entire living room just so he has a nice background.
Mm.
You know, for YouTube, for the same people I'm complaining on their phones, but yeah, I want to reach out to them.
Yeah.
Just with my stuff. But I think the separation, like, I understand when people are at work and they're like, hey, I don't have that much to do at work today, so I'm going to just screw around my phone and get paid.
Yep.
Go for it. Totally get it. I think it was I spent money to be somewhere, and yeah, I'm doing the thing I could do sitting at home on my couch for free.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what got me. And I know people have gone off on all of our addictions to it, and they're listening to us and they're watching us and all that stuff. But something just triggered and snapped with me in a certain way this weekend that I'm like, I want to have more conversations. I want to create more. I want to expand, but I don't want to be the person sitting there scrolling. I want to be, I guess, in a way, the one that they're looking at when they scroll.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I want to be living and creating. I don't want to be the one consuming.
Yeah. And I mean, it's fine to consume, but yeah, you gotta also, the reality of it is it's part of our lives now. It's not going away. And we need to manage it. We need to, you know, we need to find like they say, life work balance. We need to find a life cellular social media balance. I know when I was down in Houston recently, you know, we, like, where I was taking my course, we only got like a 10-minute break, you know, every hour and a half or something. And then we got like a half hour lunch. And the first day, the first morning or whatever, first day maybe, I would scroll on my phone during my break and just kind of sit there, right? Like maybe go to the bathroom and come back. But then day two came and I was like, you know, I'm in Texas, you know, like I'm literally like, there's green grass outside. I can walk around in my shorts and t-shirt. So I made a point of, as they say, touching grass. Like I went outside, like it was only a 10-minute break, but I made sure to use every minute of it. You know, it's not to say I didn't check my phone, you know, because I was still, you know, on the clock because it is a work thing. I still had to check my work emails, and of course I would check to see if like my wife texted me or something like that. But you know, I said to myself, like, I'm here. You got to make the most of it. So I made a point of going out and touching grass and walking around and breathing in the fresh air. But you know, there was a lot of people that didn't do that. They just sat there on their phones. But I was like, damn, you know, like I just came from a snow globe. Like I got, you know, like this is an early taste of spring. I got to make the most of it. But Yeah. No.
I like the touch and grasp phase.
Yeah.
Or phrase, not phase. Phrase.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think more people need to do that. And I know even myself, you know, like when I, like, when I was a kid, of course, we didn't have social media or anything like that. But I was a bit of a couch potato. I sat inside a little too much. I think I wish I had gone outside a little bit more. But who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe things happen. Like, I'm doing this podcast. Like, I know quite a bit about pop culture, you know, science fiction, Star Trek and stuff, because of those years I spent as a couch potato. So it has paid off in some respects, and who knows, like maybe if I had went for that walk when I was a 15-year-old kid, when I, instead of watching, you know, another Star Trek rerun, maybe I would have got mauled by a bear. Who knows, right? Like maybe there's a reason, you know, maybe God was like, just sit and relax, you know,
true, true.
You know, you've watched this episode of TNG, you know, 20 times already, watch it a 21st time. But yeah, we never know, you know, but the one thing I will say, with cell phones and people being on them, like one positive I can say is it does get some introverts out because they still have that connection to their computer through their phone. Like they can still do things that would keep them at home normally, but they're like, hey, you know, I should go see this concert or WrestleMania or whatever. But you know, I've still got that addiction to my computer. So normally they wouldn't have gone out, but now that they have this, you know, this compromise, they, you know, maybe more people are stepping out and we just don't realize it.
Well, and like I was even introverted around my own family growing up. So, heading out to my grandparents for Sunday dinner,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not relating to sports that are on, you know, there's certain things that I'm just like, I have nothing to contribute to this conversation. I just kind of feel weird sitting in the room, mm-hmm. where there's only like so many rooms I can be in. And I would read. Like, oh, my grandparents got a new Time magazine, new Reader's Digest, whatever. And I would sit and read. And yep. sitting to read was not like, oh, I'm ignoring them. I wasn't being rude. It wasn't anything. It was like, oh, he enjoys coming to our house and reading the stuff. Because, you know, my mom didn't have the Reader's Digest or Time subscription. The only thing is my family, as soon as they were done with it, they would give it to my mom, give it to my aunt. Like, magazines make a big loop around my family still to this day. But I wasn't being rude. I wasn't being antisocial. It's just like, oh, you enjoy this thing that we have here. But it was also my way to kind of escape and put a shell around myself. And like, I'm present, but I'm not present. And if I had a smartphone back then, absolutely is what I would have been on.
Yeah.
It would have been the same thing. Like you're saying, it would have been the exact same reason I was doing it. Like, this is my security blanket to be outside and inside at the same time.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm still kind of like for me, I used to bring a book with me everywhere, and I still do. If we go on a road trip, you know, if Crystal's driving, I'll just read my book, you know,
mm-hmm.
or if, you know, like say we're, you know, at her dad's or whatever. And, you know, say Crystal and her stepmom go out shopping or whatever, and it's just me and her dad and he's watching his program. You know, I might just go grab my book and read that. Like, I don't like, you know, like, especially watching something on TV. Like you said, you know, if there's a sports thing on and you just had no interest in it, I'm the same way. I can't just sit there and just watch something I have no interest in. I got to occupy my mind. So, yeah, that's why I always bring a book with me everywhere I go. I still do it to this day. And I still think I don't read enough, you know, I don't know. I know I don't, but anywho, yeah, no, that was a good topic there, Kev. All right. So I guess it'd be the last topic for the night. My second topic, I was hoping we were going to have a few more people on, but, because I was kind of interested to see what other people might have to say. But I think you and I can, we'll tackle this just as well. We just won't get as many answers. So this is, I just got to find it now. There we are. It's actually a question I'm going to throw out there. And I'll start. I'll answer, and then if you got an answer, go ahead. So the question is there any franchise, series, or genre you just never checked out but wanted to or still want to one day? So for years, what made me think of this was for years, Doctor Who was always on my periphery. For some reason, my mom, because it used to show up on CBC, and I'd be like, I want to watch this. And mom was like, no, that's stupid. We're not watching it. She, like, I don't know, my mom really didn't like British programming when I was growing up. And I think it's because back in the, you know, in the 60s, a lot of CBC programming was just yanked from the BBC. So it was a lot of British stuff. So, like, for my mom, she didn't like it. Whereas, like, my dad's family, like, they loved watching Coronation Street and stuff like that. So it was a little different. But anyway, I remember her not liking Doctor Who. And admittedly, old Doctor Who is a little hokey. I'm not going to say that it's, you know, it's science fiction, but it's more, it's science fiction fantasy. Whereas, like, Star Trek is, like, say, more science fiction because they base, you know, their fiction on science fact, whereas Doctor Who, they kind of just, you know, make stuff up as they go and that sort of thing. So anytime it would pop up, my mom would be like, no, you're not watching it. So it was always on my peripheries. And then I did watch the 1996 Fox Doctor Who movie and I did like it, but then it didn't go anywhere. You know, because it was supposed to be like a pilot for a new Fox series, right, that they were going to do with BBC, I guess, but then it never happened. And then, yeah, I heard it came back, and I would see snippets here and there. And there was a show in Canada called Innerspace. It's like Entertainment Tonight, but for science fiction fans. So I used to watch, it used to air like Friday nights, and then it was like Sci-Fi Buzz, you know what Sci-Fi Buzz was in the 90s. And then eventually went to 5 days a week and all that kind of stuff. It's since been canceled. They canceled, I want to say 2017. And yeah, just totally disappointed they canceled. Anyway, they used to talk about Doctor Who and, you know, about the new series, like the Christopher Eccleston, you know, like the reboot, well, not reboot, but relaunch. And then David Tennant, they'd talk about him. They'd show clips. And then finally it was Matt Smith. And then it was in 2011 at the Calgary Comic Con. I was actually at the Innerspace panel, and they were talking about Doctor Who and about how, you know, they really liked Matt Smith. They really liked that new season with him in it. So after 2011, Calgary Comic Con, I thought, you know, what the heck? So I bought the first series on iTunes and watched it and fell in love. Like, I fell in love with Doctor Who. I went back and watched some David Tennant stuff, some Eccleston stuff. I continued forward watching the Matt Smith stuff. He's still my favorite Doctor. And, you know, I really got into watching Doctor Who. After I was like 31 when I started watching it. It was, like I said, always on my peripheries. Finally got to it, enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not enjoying it now. I don't really, you know, even the most recent David Tennant stuff wasn't good. So I haven't been watching it. But, you know, you can still like something and not like all of it. So that got me thinking about this question. So for me, there's some classic sci-fi writers I want to check out that I've never checked out. A.E. Van Vo. I think that's how you say... Is A.E. Van Vo a woman or a man?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Because that's... You know, because that's from, like, the 50s, 40s, 50s era of science fiction where women weren't supposed to be writing, or they wouldn't publish women writers, so they would have to use, you know, like, initials or pen names. So
male, Alfred Elton.
Oh, okay. So I always thought maybe A.E. Van Vo was a woman, and maybe, you know, like, D.C. Fontana, like, she was a Star Trek writer. She was, like, I think the first, like, female head writer or something. No, not head writer. She was the first female female lead staff writer or something, I think, for a television series. But she had to, she couldn't use Dorothy Fontana. She had to use DC Fontana in order to, you know, slip past the powers that be that would, you know, veto her position if they found out she was a woman, right? So, yeah. So, anyway, that's a little tangent on, you know, back then with the initials. But, yeah, like, science fiction writers like that, you know, the ones that Harlan Ellison used to talk about on his Harlan Ellison's watching commentary on Sci-Fi Buzz. Like, I, you know, like, we've taught Kevin, like, since his passing, I've went back... Every once in a while, I jump into that rabbit hole where I just watch, like, his old commentaries and his old interviews, and he's always mentioning these writers. So, you know, when I'm out, you know, at the thrift store and stuff and, you know, looking in the book section, I always look for, you know, these older writers that aren't necessarily being published these days, because I've never really read, you know, their stuff. Like, Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov are probably the oldest writers that I've read, besides Harlan Ellison. So I kind of want to go back a little bit further and really check out some of those, you know, classic science fiction writers. Yeah. I would say gaming is something that I've, you know, everyone always, I don't know. People assume because I'm a I'm a comic book guy and a bit of a nerd that I play video games, but I never really been a video game person. It's always, again, it's always something that's interested me, like, you know, seeing what they can do now with video games. But even then, I still like my Galaga. I'd rather play Galaga or Pac-Man or Super Mario Brothers than the new stuff that's out there. So I don't know if I'll ever get into gaming. And it's so expensive. Like, it's so expensive. I think I would really like to get into more board gaming. Because I know certain comic book stores, like, they do, like, game nights and stuff.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, and we actually had one in my town. Like, we had a game store in my town. But, unfortunately, it closed. And, yeah, and it sucked, because they were starting game nights and stuff, and I was like, I'm going to go. But then someone broke into their place, and they didn't have insurance, so it took them a while to get back on their feet. Then they got back on their feet, and then the guy who owned the store got into some trouble, so then he had to close the store. So, yeah, it was this whole thing. It never worked out for me. But, you know, and the nearest comic book store from where I live is over an hour or so. But I'd love to get into board gaming, like, because I love stuff like Risk, the board game Risk, stuff like that. I it's just hard finding people willing to commit to doing that. And I'm not a Monopoly guy. I'm not, you know, those type of board games. Like, Risk, yes. Monopoly, no. I'm just not into that. I did play Settlers of Catan a couple times. It was interesting, but I was never, again, I got no one to play with, so I never really got into it. So, but yeah, that's definitely something I want to get into a little bit more. What about you, Kev? Is there any... you know, franchise or genre or something that's always been on your peripheries that you want to check out?
Well, I mean, there's so much stuff that I'm like, what can I do with this? And some of it is just casual on my own, and some of it is, how can I make this into a project to share? And I mean, I've thought this way for near 20 years now for stuff. Board games, you're absolutely right. One of my first things that I ended up doing with people online, there's a podcast, before Decca was born, so a while ago in my life now. But there's a podcast, there's a group in LA, and it was called Pizza Games and Zombies. So every episode, they ordered a pizza from a different spot in LA, they played a different board game, and they had some random zombie topic they talked about. And it would go good like 2-3 hours. And they, whatever, it wasn't Twitch, but whatever like streaming thing there was at the time, they put it up on there and they had a chat room. And I knew one of the people from his podcast, and we talked comics a lot online. So I was watching for him, but then I got to know the rest of the people on there. And so I was the one in the chat every week. And then people would come in like 30 minutes later. They're like, hey, what's going on tonight? I'm like, oh, we're playing, you know, they're playing Settlers of Catan, and they're doing this and doing that. And so then I became like the moderator for the chat.
Oh, cool.
Because I was the one that knew what was going on. But here I am in New York. They're all in L.A. and playing a board game.
Yeah.
And that's the only time, and I wasn't even playing because I wasn't in the room, but like, I don't have a group around here to play games with. And I'm not, to go back to like the introverted extroverted part, the previous conversation this evening, I couldn't host that stuff. Mm-hmm. If someone was hosting and invited me over and they're like, oh, I'll show everyone how to play the game and I'll help you out and everything, I'm all for it. I would go.
Yeah.
But I just don't have that social circle around here to do that. It was same with, I finally got to play Dungeons and Dragons online for a different podcast, and that's the only time I've played it. I would play it again in a second. But again, I couldn't be the host, or I couldn't be the dungeon master in this case. I would need someone else to set it up for me and kind of help me along until I knew what I was doing. But though, like, we're talking more social things for that. Like, I was able to play online because someone who is an expert helped me along the whole way. But there's no way I could do it on my own again.
Yeah.
You know, it just won't work. There's so many, like, I mean, comics is kind of open. I do want to do more with like the EC horror stuff. And that's because it scared me so much. Like, I found some of my uncle's old ones up in the attic for when I was way too young, and it scared me so bad and gave me nightmares and all.
Yeah.
But I want to revisit it now as an adult.
Yeah.
There's stuff where I've always had this idea of like finding trashy pop culture and finding a reason to like justify it or, you know, give it some sort of respect. And it could be like the whatever prefix exploitation movies in like 60s, 70s, 80s, or your grindhouse stuff or whatever. Like, here's trash.
Yeah.
But here's something redeeming in it. Like, I just think that would be a fun project. But again, I'm making work out of my own entertainment. And then there's stuff where it's like, oh, I've read a little, but I want to read a lot. Like, I've read one Tarzan short story collection. And I'm like, this is fun. Like, the just adventure pulp writing, I'm like, this is fun. This is so cool. I have an extensive Burroughs collection, including John Carter of Mars. So I got probably most of Tarzan, probably most of that. And all I've read still to this day is that one short story collection.
Yeah.
That was forever ago. But I have them all. One day I'll crack this open. But I got, I read a little bit of Conan. And I'm like, God, this is better than I thought. Like, this is way better than I thought it would be. And now I have, like, a ton of Conan paperbacks and collections. It's all still sitting there. Like, in theory, I'm going to do this one day.
Yeah, me too.
It's like, to go along with the EC Comics stuff, like, horror scared me so much when I was a kid. But I'm like, I really want to watch, like, it's funny. I'm more than willing to watch trash of, like, sci-fi trash and prison movie trash or adventure movie trash or whatever, but I don't want to watch horror trash.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to watch horror, I want to watch the good ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, it scared me so much when I was a kid, I want to sit down and be like, okay, this is considered a classic. I need to watch it.
Yeah.
Or, like, Nightmare on Elm Street scared me so much when I was a kid, but I'm like, I bet I could handle it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me try to do that. So there's things like that I want to do, but it's also like, okay, I got to get through all the comics that I already own. I have movies I actually really do want to watch, or TV shows that I've yet to get to. You know, plus like all this other stuff. I'm like, where am I adding other things to this?
Mm-hmm.
Ironically enough, the time I felt like I was getting the most done and getting through the most of my two watch stack was when I had COVID.
Yeah.
So I was just marathoning stuff all day because I couldn't get off the couch. I was like, oh, can I just get a light bout of COVID again? Just enough to be home for a couple days and get through some TV shows.
Yeah. Well, and I'm the same way because, like, it's been a while since I've been that sick where I just lay there. Like, it hurts to move. But yeah, like, sometimes you have the best binging experiences when you're sick.
Yeah.
Because it's, I don't know, for me it seems like when I'm feeling good, it's like, I feel like I gotta be doing something. So I'll start, like, I don't know, cleaning the house or something, or you know, doing yard work. Like, I always feel like I'm, like, if I'm able-bodied, I should be doing something productive.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to just lay there and watch something, but sometimes you got to do that to properly binge something.
Well, and also, I mean, going back to when we were younger, less responsibilities and all that, but that's how we discovered stuff. So one mm-hmm. day I was sitting there, one day you were sitting there, two different channels, two different countries, and we're flipping through, and here's a show with this cantankerous old man, but he's very funny, and it appears that he writes good books. Well, mm-hmm. good short stories.
Yep.
And so we both end up falling in love with Harlan. Like, I remember, who is this guy? He sounds brilliant. I went to the library. They had, yep. like, two books by him, and I checked them out immediately.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing, only they didn't have it at my library. They had ordered them in.
Yep.
But I got them to order them in.
Yeah, but if I wasn't randomly at home that day, bored mm-hmm. or whatever, flipping through the channels, I would have never saw it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I needed that author, those words to come into my life somehow.
Yeah.
You know, one of my best friends, my shorthand with people is pop culture knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And pop culture jokes. Like, to this day, myself or my friends will still do, everybody remember we parked in the itchy lot.
Yeah.
And that's a Simpsons joke from, what, 30 years ago at this point?
Yep.
And we still do it. But I have one of my best friends, she grew up playing and going outside, and her family took them to trips. And, like, one summer they just toured national parks, you know, stuff like that. So I make a pop culture knowledge, and I just get deer in the headlights. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how do you know that? What? How do you not know? Like, yeah. Did you not see this on TV after school? And all she's like, I rode my bike. I went outside. I'm like, oh, that sounds awful. You had parents that loved you and took you outside. You missed out on being a latchkey kid like me. You could have had TV be your babysitter.
Yeah. Well, I would say her parents probably had more money than our parents did, so they could afford to do things like that. But yeah, that's where a lot of it came from was, you know, we didn't really go anywhere. So it's like, watch TV.
Yeah, TV. I mean, like, it's no fault, nothing against her. And I've, as an adult, I've mm-hmm. thanked my mom for it. But, like, she didn't have money. So our local vacations was like, okay, here's a water park that's like a 2-hour drive. Here's this beautiful mountain town with all sorts of cool stuff. It's a 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
But like, we didn't do, you know, random trip to big cities or to, you know, warm vacation destinations or stuff like that. We did in the area, affordable, and usually something she could drive to in a day and back.
Yeah.
You know, like that, that was the stuff we did. So my escape was TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, probably good reason I love New York City is because we had 3 New York City channels on the TV.
Yeah.
And it was this magical, faraway place that's really not that far away and not that magical.
Yeah.
But that's how it was to me.
Yeah.
With the TV.
Yeah, like, for me, yeah, it was pretty much the same, except when I was 14, my parents did take us to Disneyland. But that was a road trip. We drove. So we went and visited some family in Idaho. And then we went down. We spent a day in Vegas and a night in Vegas. And then we went to Anaheim and then spent 3 days there and a day in Tijuana. But we but we stayed in Anaheim. We just did a bus tour to Tijuana.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then we drove back up through Northern California, or through California, through Oregon, Washington.
Yep.
And then up in through BC, and then we ended up in Banff for a night. So, yeah, it was a 2-week vacation. So what happened was my dad had a piece of land with his brother. Like, they owned a quarter section of land, and they sold it. And then with that money, like, that paid for our trip.
All right.
So, yeah, like, it was like, my parents got a little windfall, and they're like, you know, we got to take our kids on a trip. So, that's the only one we ever went on growing up. Other than that, yeah, we would go to, you know, the furthest we'd go is usually Sylvan Lake, which was like 3 hours from where we lived. We would go tenting. We went there a couple summers, but then my aunt and uncle moved to Sylvan Lake, so we just stayed at their place for a couple summers, like, just for, like, a weekend type of thing. And that was kind of it, you know? But, yeah, we just, you know, made the most of what we had.
We did Disney when I was 9 years old and my brother was 7. And my parents said for years that they were still paying off that trip, you know, just maxing out cards for it. But we were a good age for it and had a blast. And there's still stuff I remember to this day. We did Disney, we did Epcot, we did SeaWorld during that trip.
Mm.
But you know why I knew every random character going around the Disney parks? Because TV raised me.
Yep.
I knew who these ones were from movies that were 20 or 30 years old because I was still watching it on Disney Channel.
Yep.
There was nothing else for me to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I will say, though, I'll say it, Chris. I know you can't say it.
Okay.
Because you were happily married. But there's a... It seems a lot of women now, they're into either horror or true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, and actually my boss just started listening to this true crime podcast. It sounds fascinating, but that's not escape to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's real.
Yeah.
Like, I could do, like I said, even your terrible, not terrible, like, bad movies, but, like, over-the-top gore, violence, whatever, horror movie, it's fantasy. In the end, it's still fake.
Yeah.
Even if I'm disgusted, disturbed, having nightmares in my 40s, it's still fake. But the true crime ones, I'm just like, I can't. I watch things, and I read things, and I do whatever to escape bad things in reality.
Yeah.
And knowing that happened doesn't help me escape.
Yeah.
So I just can't do it. All like not me crapping hating on anyone that does enjoy. I'm not yucking anyone's yum.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that quote today and I had to steal it. But I just can't. Like, that's for a list of, like, oh, what's something you would like to get into if you have time or whatever. I just could never get into it. I understand the appeal. I totally get it. But it just doesn't. It wouldn't satisfy a need for me.
Yeah, for me, I am a true crime guy, to a certain extent. What got me, like, my mom has always been into true crime. Like, she used to read Anne Rule. She wrote that book, yep, about Ted Bundy.
And was that Green River Killer for that one? Was that Ted Bundy or was that someone else? I get them all confused.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think her, like, Ted Bundy book was called A Stranger Beside Me, I think.
Oh, I think you're right. I think you're right.
So, but I mean, that could be, yeah, I don't know the specifics, but yeah. So anyway, my mom got into watching, you know, true crime documentaries and stuff. And then I got into it too, because, you know, we only had one TV. And then as an adult, I went on a trip to Germany when I was 21 to go visit a friend, and I bought a book at the airport, and it was a collection of short stories by a Canadian writer named Max Haynes. He's a true crime writer, and he would do, like, a true crime story in the Sunday edition of the Sun newspaper in Canada.
All right.
So, you know, and I religiously bought the Sunday Sun for years. I didn't necessarily pick it up every day, but Sundays I always made a point of picking it up because it would have, like, the big entertainment section. It would have the TV guide with it. It would have, you know, the big sports pullout, and it would have, you know, the big the colored comics section. And then it would also have, Max Haynes. So anyway, at the airport, I bought this collection of Max Haynes stories, and I just, like, binged it. I think I read that book pretty much. I finished it in my flight over there. Cause, you know, I had it was like a 4-hour flight to Toronto and then an 8-hour flight to, where'd I fly to? Leipzig? No, I flew, I can't remember where I flew to. I flew to a German city, and then I had to hitch another flight to another. So anyway, it was a long flight. It was long flights. So I had plenty of time to read. And yeah, I just got into reading Max Haynes. And I know we've talked about this on another episode, but I'll just bring it up here. The only thing with true crime that I can't get behind is when they make a dramatization about a true crime. Most recently, like, they did that Dahmer series on Netflix.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I will watch a true crime documentary about Jeffrey Dahmer, because, you know, you're talking to police officers, you're talking to, you know, family members, you're talking to people that are speaking to truth about what actually happened. But the Dahmer series on Netflix, they actually changed certain aspects of the case to make it more dramatic, to make it more interesting for people to watch, I guess. And I have a problem with that. Because when you start sensationalizing, because essentially that's what they're doing. They're sensationalizing the true events to make it more appealing for people to watch. And once you start doing that, I think you're doing a disservice to the victims. You're doing a disservice to, you know, the law enforcement officers and the people that, you know, brought these monsters to justice. You know, like Spike Lee did that movie Summer of Sam. I didn't like that. It creeped me out. Not just the whole thing with the dog talking to the guy, but the fact that they, I don't know, the way that they advertised it, it made it look like it was like a coming of age interesting movie, but it's like, no, it's a movie about a guy that's killing people. Like, how, you know, like, but they spun it in a way that it made it seem like it was fun and exciting, and I don't like that. I don't like dramatizing true crime. You know, if you want to dramatize, you know, do the Law and Order thing where they will take a headline, they will change names, they will change circumstances, and it's a fictional story, but you know it's based on a true story. And they tell you that. You know, there's that little blurb at the beginning of the episode that says, you know, this episode is based on events from the headlines, but, you know, it's been changed for, you know, fictitious purposes, you know, like they, you know, they change it. So you know it, you know, like, because they did an episode which was basically the Carla Homolka, Paul Bernardo case, like the, you know, the couple up here in Canada that murdered some girls. And, you know, Law and Order did an episode based on that. And you knew it was them, but of course it wasn't them. Like, they used different names. It took place in New York City and all that kind of stuff. That I don't have a problem with. But when you're actually, you know, like Dahmer, I've seen stories where some of the victims' families, like, it re-traumatized them. Seeing, you know, this miniseries, you know, it brought back these horrible memories of, you know, losing their loved ones to this monster. And again, I'm not throwing any shade to, I can't remember the actor's name. Like he did a really good job portraying Jeffrey Dahmer, but I don't like it when it's, you know, I don't like it when you fictionalize true crime. And to be honest with you, like, I'm like, and this isn't true crime, but this is, again, I'm just talking about fictionalizing reality. The movie Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, like, I remember when it first came out, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. But then as I actually watched documentaries about Queen and about what really happened, like, that movie, like, you might as well have changed the characters' names, because, you know, most of it isn't what actually happened. You know, like, there's certain things, certain beats of Freddie Mercury and Queen's existence that they hit on, but, you know, they changed things for dramatic purposes. So it's a work of fiction. Like, I have more respect for the Rocket Man movie, the one about Elton John, because it was a musical. So, it told you right from the get-go. Like, I mean, we don't live in a musical world, so you know this is, you know, isn't how it happened, but you can get behind it because it's a musical. Bohemian Rhapsody, I can't get behind it because now that I've learned, you know, like, that movie painted Freddie Mercury in a very bad light, and that's not what happened. I don't like when we fictionalize reality, whether it's true crime or, you know, pop culture.
Yeah, I can see that.
But anywho, Kev, did you have any more to add there?
No, I think it's the, and maybe it's something why I have an issue with it as well. I think it's the, actually, shit, let's tie it back to where we started this conversation. It's treating people who have committed horrible crimes as celebrities,
mm-hmm.
and glamorizing them. So we can take that back to OJ.
Yeah,
but, like, you know, glorifying and celebrating and publicizing and all for people that have murdered or other terrible things. And at least Law and Order or certain other things, okay, yes, here was the base of this idea, but we have changed it and altered it into a new format, into a new thing, and therefore put some distance there,
mm-hmm.
so we're not glorifying and glamorizing tragic events. We're just using it as the inspiration to tell our own story.
Yeah.
And that gives a separation.
And the nice thing about that too is, like, when you do it that way, sometimes you get a better ending than you do in real life. Like in that, like I said, that episode with Carla Homolka, because in reality, Carla Homolka got away with murdering her sister, with murder, you know, like she did 10 years, but I mean, she helped kill people, you know, like she should have been locked away and the key thrown away, but she didn't. She got away with it because she testified against Paul Bernardo. But in the Law and Order episode, she didn't get away with it. Like the judge, like it was neat how they did it. Because McCoy basically tricked her into showing who she really was on the stand. You know, like he kind of led her along so that she would reveal like she's actually a monster, and the judge threw out the deal that they had arranged because it's within the judge's power to do that. You know, in this fictional universe, I don't know if it's reality. So this character who was representing Carla Homolka went to jail, and I was like, yes, like this is what should have happened. She's going to spend the rest of her life in jail, whereas Carla Homolka got out and is out there living amongst the people, you know. But anyway, there's something I was going to add. Oh, crap. Man, I'm getting old. There was something I was going to add to this whole reality talk. But anyway, I don't know. Must not have been important. Or it'll come to me. Yeah, it'll come to me in a minute or two. But I think we can call it an episode. So next week, I don't know what we will have from the network. I don't have a podcast scheduled for next week just because it's going to be super crazy at work. So I might do another episode of Chris's Soapbox because I do have an idea. And the thing with that is it's a solo podcast, so it's just me ranting for 20 minutes or something. But then I can kind of record it without having to jostle anyone. Because my biggest fear is, like next week I'm going to be so busy at work. I might not know, like, if I schedule a podcast, I might have to cancel it. It might not be till the last minute. And I don't I don't like to mess with people's lives, you know. Like with you, Kevin, and our other podcasters, I don't like doing that if I can avoid that. And next week it's just too uncertain. So I'm just going to reconvene in 2 weeks. We might do an episode of Trek 1701. I think that's the plan. Or it'll be Geek Fallout Reloaded. I'm not sure at this point. But that is coming. So, Kevin, where can we find you on the internet?
All right. You can find me on, well, I'm still on all the social medias. I'm just being more careful with it. At Hellions Team, and HelliansTeam.com is my home blog for all things Kevin.
Excellent. Excellent. Damn, I know there was something I was going to mention, and it's bugging me. It's so bugging me. We're talking about the true crime, and damn, I know as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to remember, and I'm going to be so mad with myself for forgetting, but anyway. We'll call this an episode. So thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us ramble on about our little topics. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. And I totally remembered what I was going to say. So anyway, this is after the recording. What I was going to say is, I know watching the like documentaries and stuff on Ted Bundy, it just blows my mind that women were sending him, and Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, women would send him, like, send them, like, love letters and profess their love and want to marry them and would send them, you know, naked pictures of themselves and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, why are you so attracted to somebody that killed people? Like, that, I find that crazy and that's strange. But it really happened, and this is before the internet, so people were mailing these letters, they were handwriting these letters to these killers and these monsters, these women wanted to marry them. It just, I don't know, still blows my mind to this point. Anyway, that's the point I was going to bring up before we ended the episode. So, anyway, this was a different type of episode. It was kind of put together, you know, in segments, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So anyway, you have a good one, and I'll talk to you soon.